Hello, Hot Takedown listeners. It is Wednesday morning, and we have a special little treat for you. You've heard Neil and I talk about the Panic City podcast, which is our sort of side passion project. It's a podcast about the Mets that we've been doing all season long. And since the Mets are now in a National League wildcard game on Wednesday night, we figured we'd bring you the episode here in your Hot Takedown feed for those of you who maybe not aren't Mets fans but want to get ready for the game on Wednesday night. We break down the starting pitching matchups as well as a few other things. Warning, it is an unabashed pro Mets podcast. There is no objectivity in what you are about to hear. If that will offend your sensibilities, walk away now. You've been warned. All right, here's me and Neil. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to Panic City, the podcast about the emotions inside, roiling inside of Mets fans. I'm Chadwick Matlin, an editor at 538 by day, a Mets fan by night, including tomorrow night, the NL wildcard game, a one-game playoff.
My goodness.
That is Neil Payne's My Goodness you're hearing on the other side of the table and the other side of the mic. Neil, you share the same bio as me.
Chad.
You share the same emotional state as I.
I just want to pause for one moment and point out that we officially have 100% playoff probability.
Neil, you ruined my joke. I was going to say, Neil, what are the playoff
scooped
odds?
You. Scooped
100%.
You on it.
The Mets clinched a trip to the playoffs in a game over the second to last game over the weekend against the Philadelphia Phillies. Some celebrations, some champagne. There is still a question, I think, of whether you get a banner. I think you have to win, right?
You got to win this game, yeah. I think, to get a banner. Now, I wouldn't put it past Wilpon.
Sure, right.
To
sell a few souvenirs.
Sure.
Neil, today on today's show, we, of course, are going to be panicking about the only thing that there is to panic about, the game that's right in front of us. It's an NL wildcard game against the San Francisco Giants in an even numbered year, which we'll get into.
Oh boy. We had big picture panic last week, and now this is very small picture panic.
Last week we panicked about the playoffs as a whole. Now it's about what actually matters. The ins, the outs, the matchups. So Neil, usually we'd say what our record was over the last week, how we were doing. It doesn't matter. It's a fresh start, Neil. We're at 100% in the playoffs. Should we talk about the World Series odds?
As
538 presents them?
I mean, we could.
Let's do that.
Okay.
So 538, the site that we both work for, runs both a sort of power rating system throughout the year and then also sort of projection of the season to come. We've been using those projections for our playoff odds all throughout the year. But it's also, we also do World Series projections or who's going to win the World Series as well as the division series and the championship series for each division, or each league rather. Neil, we have gone 0-0 in the playoffs so far. What has that done to our World Series odds?
So, our World Series probability right now is 3%, Chad. 3%. And that is exactly where it was this time last week because we had damn near 100% playoff odds.
Neil, just, because we like to every now and then ground things in something beyond baseball, I just want to remind people what the 538 political forecast is at this exact moment. Mm. Donald Trump has a 25% chance of winning the presidency. Hillary Clinton at 75. So, in other words, Donald Trump is 8 times more likely to become president than the Mets are to win the World Series. Now, unfair comparison, only 2 candidates versus 10 teams.
Well, I was going to say Donald Trump has roughly the same odds of winning the presidency that the Cubs have of winning the World Series.
Whew.
Isn't that
these
I don't
sober
even know
stats.
What to say about that.
All right, let's not alienate our Trump fan listeners and instead talk about this game. So, Neil, the Mets and the Giants finished with the exact same record. The Mets are hosting this wild card game at home, a game that we are privileged enough to be going to in person, rather remarkably. Some tickets landed
some miracle
in our lap yesterday through the altruism and charity of our boss's boss's boss, basically. So, Neil, we're playing at home. Mm-hmm. The Giants have been as good as us. We split the season. Sorry, we won the season series by one game against the Giants, which is why we're playing at home. Before we get into the numbers and the breakdown and all that, where are you at? Where are you at emotionally? This is an emotional podcast.
I am. So I was feeling not very panicked or nervous into, you know, after clinching on Saturday. Sunday's game, totally meaningless. It was the first Mets game all year that I didn't actually like pay full attention to. And
yeah, you fell asleep during plenty of West Coast
trips. There were some where I fell asleep, but most I at least gave the effort of paying attention to. The intention was there at first pitch. I rarely missed a first pitch. We'll just put it that way. And so in this case, I, you know, was listening to the Buffalo Bills game on the radio and kind of futzing around on my phone while my wife took Japanese lessons out in Brooklyn. So I sort of let the Mets kind of exist. I checked on the score a few times, but was very passive about it, almost, I think, out of avoidance and not wanting to kind of think about it. And so then as the days have approached, I shot a video in which I talked about the series for 538 yesterday.
Heart beating a little faster.
Out in Central Park. That kind of made it a little more real as the children were playing baseball in the little diamond behind where we were shooting. And then today, yeah, I think, I mean, I am currently feeling sort of that like knot in your, you know, in the pit of your stomach of anticipation. Okay. And the other teams playing tonight also kind of like makes it real. This
right.
is like, we've had many days off and now this is actually starting.
So, okay. So Neil, I'm right there with you. You know, longtime listeners will know that I have some personal events happening this weekend that are leading to my being a bit distracted from the Mets. So I have a feeling I'm going to show up to the stadium tomorrow and really, or we're recording this Tuesday evening.
Give it your all.
And really just like be overcome by what I remember happening in the World Series last year, which is just the thing about baseball, Neil, if I can just get big picture for a second.
Sure.
Every pitch in playoff baseball has a frisson of excitement.
Whoa.
To it. Until, especially when
it's tied.
I think
you stuck that word in one of my stories one time.
You know, Neil, we all have our hobby horses. We all have the words we come back to. And so I just cannot wait to be at Citi Field with 40-something thousand people in which Noah Syndergaard's 99-mile-an-hour fastball is buzzing Joe Panik's chin and for us all to lose our minds. Speaking of which, Joe Panik,
honorary
favorite
City.
Giants player of this podcast.
They platoon Joe Panik now. So are against Syndergaard, is he going to be starting or will we be with Kelby Tomlinson?
You know, Neil, this is why I keep you around. I don't know.
No, so Tomlinson bats right, so he would be facing the lefty. We're good. Joe Panik of Panik City will be in the lineup.
Excellent. So Neil, let's talk about these two teams. Let's start, I think, with the pitchers. We have Madison Bumgarner versus Noah Syndergaard. Of course, Bumgarner is the sort of like postseason folk hero in a way, right? I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, especially after the performance that he just dominated throughout the 2014 postseason, culminating in you and I live blog this game, just
right.
untouchable in Game 7 against the Royals, to the point that our boss Nate Silver was advocating that the Royals had a better chance sending Alex Gordon on some kind of like inside the park home run attempt or something, instead of, you know, because they were so
like,
unlikely
to
score a single runner from 90 feet away against this dominant left-hander.
Now, that was two years ago, and Bumgarner has had a pretty good year. His win-loss record is not that – it's good, not that impressive. It's 59. I know we don't believe in wins-loss. So let me give you some stats.
Together,
let me give
Chadwick.
You some other stats, Neil. He pitched 226 innings, pretty high. So his his ERA plus, and Neil, you want to run us through our ERA plus one more time? Or
yeah.
you'd rather FIP? I can give you FIP.
You know, seasoned sabermetricians would use ERA minus, but I'll look past that.
You know, Neil, I'm
chat.
Just looking at the thing in front of me here. And is ERA plus
so ERA plus, ERA plus is the number of runs in kind of excess of the league average that the compared to the number that the pitcher actually allowed. So if you have an ERA plus of 120 or whatever,
this guy's got an ERA plus of 149.
So for 149, that means that the league would have allowed 49% more runs than you did under the same circumstances and the same number of
innings. So Bumgarner's got a 149 ERA plus. He allows 3.14 runs per nine innings, just 79 on this season. Neil, you want me to go through Syndergaard's in those same stats? You can get a little comparison before we keep going.
Well, yeah. Are you going to talk about his FIP?
Oh, we can talk about his FIP. He's got a magnificent, actually a good but not great FIP of 3.24.
83 FIP minus. That means he allowed 83% as many runs as the league average.
Okay, so now
or FIP based runs, because it's all kind of based on fielding independent statistics.
And we should say for Panic City listeners who aren't comfortable with these stats, the idea here is that wins loss obscure a player's true value, a pitcher's true value, because there are so many things that go into a win and loss, including run support. Whereas these stats that we're giving are more individualized for the pitcher and try and figure out. So, for example, FIP, fielding independent pitching, is how he pitches when you take away the field, what happens in the field, essentially. So,
And we should say for Bumgarner, you know, even though 2014 was kind of this, you know, year that we think of him as being lights out, during the regular season, he was not as good that year as he has been this year. And this year was his second best season by wins above replacement, last year being his number one season. So he is kind of still in the form that he was in, at least during the 2014 season, perhaps not, you know, quite to the same level as the final game of the World Series that year.
Okay, so Bumgarner has an ERA plus of 149. Noah Syndergaard has an ERA plus of 158. Higher is better.
Higher is better.
FIP is significantly different, Neil.
Yes, Syndergaard's FIP this year was 56% of the league average, which I believe led the league or might have been like a close second, around Clayton Kershaw, the late Jose Fernandez, RIP. And so, yeah, these are the types of players that Syndergaard is kind of in the discussion with. So if we're just going off of like dominating the strike zone on a per inning basis, Syndergaard probably should have the edge in the matchup against Bumgarner.
And we should say that Bumgarner's ERA was lower than his FIP, suggesting that maybe there was some fluke chance involved. Yeah, whereas Syndergaard's FIP was lower than his ERA, suggesting that what you'd expect to be able to be reproduced is much better for Syndergaard
and for
than
Syndergaard
it is for Bumgarner.
Yeah, and one last note on Syndergaard with that 56 FIP minus, 56% of the league average in fielding independent pitching. That was the 22nd best season of all time, according to that metric, going back to the advent of the NL and the AL, the modern era of the major leagues in 1901. And we're talking about a season in line with people like Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling, Walter Johnson, the Big Train, Zach Greinke, Greg Maddux, Pedro Martinez, Kevin Brown, Randy Johnson, Clayton Kershaw, Dwight Gooden in 1984, and of course, Matt Harvey in 2013. So this is the kind of season, it was an all-timer type of season that Syndergaard had, whereas Bumgarner had just kind of a run-of-the-mill good pitching season, you know, great, borderline great pitching season, but not on the historic level.
Okay, so therefore we Panic City is saying the pitching edge on the starting pitching, despite the legend of Bumgarner, goes to Noah Syndergaard, correct?
I think that's fair.
Okay, great. We should also note that the Mets bullpen has the highest WAR of any playoff team remaining in either league, while the Giants bullpen really faltered down the stretch. So overall, the Panic City wildcard preview suggests that pitching goes towards the Mets. Agree?
Yeah, that's true. Even though, well, in this one particular game, for sure. And the Mets also, you know, had the most WAR from their pitching staff of any team in baseball this year.
As we've discussed many times.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so now let's talk about the actual matchups, because the Mets are lousy with left-handed hitters that they depend on in the lineup. No matter what, a first baseman, whether it be Duda or Loney, is going to be a lefty. Chris Granderson is a lefty. Who am I forgetting right now? Someone that I'm totally blanking on.
Conforto is a lefty.
Conforto is not going to be starting. So is it just the two
Kelly
of them?
Johnson, Jay Bruce, a
Jay
lefty.
Jay Bruce is lefty, right. So two of the outfielders and the first baseman are going to be lefties. And Neil, Madison Bumgarner, also a lefty.
Right. He's one of the tougher lefties, actually, in Major League Baseball. And I think for this reason, if you look at Bumgarner's career splits against the current members of the Mets, he is allowing a .226 batting average and a .580 OPS on base plus slugging in, granted, very small sample of 143 plate appearances. But that kind of tells you he's tough on just about everyone that he faces, but that those numbers are not exactly encouraging for the careers of our current hitters against Bumgarner.
So what do you think that – do you think that is enough to not have – I don't know what you do. Would you start Eric Campbell at first? Eric Campbell is not a good baseball player, Neil.
Yeah. No,
I think Terry's got to just run the lineup out, right?
Yeah, I mean, the encouraging thing is that, you know, if we kind of pull it out to a wider scope and don't look at Bumgarner specifically, but just at lefties in particular, we hit for an OPS 6 percentage points higher against lefty hitters than we did against all hitters this season. So,
despite the lefties that are important to line,
right, and despite, you know, the problems against someone historically like Bumgarner, we were a better hitting team against lefty pitchers than we were against righty pitchers.
Okay. That's helpful. I like that.
So that's a good sign.
So, Neil, all we're doing is silver linings here today, apparently. We think our pitching's better. We think that actually facing lefties counterintuitively good. We played pretty much even at home and on the road, but it's always nice to be at home, not to make that cross-country trip. Where's the panic, Neil? What are we panicking about besides
mistakes? Well, you know, we have been talking about very specific things that might, you know, kind of be endemic to this matchup, but you know, the Giants scored a league average number of runs. We scored significantly fewer runs than the league average, and I don't think that
over the season, not down the stretch. Season.
Yes, but I think the lineup that we had down the stretch was not necessarily, you know, inspiring a lot of fear in people, despite how well, you know, as Drubal Cabrera hit down the stretch and Granderson started turning things around. Certainly, some guys turned it on. Some guys turned it off. Some guys like Jay Bruce looked terrible until the last week of the season. And Cespedes, you know, on a game-to-game basis sort of, you know, seemed to either look like he was flailing wildly or like the most dominant hitter in the league. So, you know, we still have huge hitting hole at catcher. There's nothing we can do about that. You know, it is a patchwork lineup, and nothing's going to change about that. TJ Rivera would be an interesting player to talk about because you are very much all in on TJ Rivera from some of your comments that you've made in Slack. I am less sold on him as a long-term solution or even as a, you know, the type of player he has appeared to be statistically.
Batting champ in the minors.
Right. In
Las
Vegas.
Doing well in the majors. I'm going to ride this ride until it plummets.
Right. I think the problem is that Rivera's stats sort of suggest that, you know, not a whole lot of what he's done or a large portion of what he's done has been luck and not repeatable. For instance, his BABIP.
I could say the same thing about my career.
360. Your own career.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Neil, what's important.
We're not counting on you.
Listeners out there. What's important is that when the luck comes, to take advantage of that luck and turn it into a sustainable position. And
right.
You know what? That's what TJ Rivera is doing for the New York Mets at second base.
Right. He has been. I mean, you know, he hit .333 on the season and, you know, really seemed to come into his own down the stretch. But still, when you have a guy whose on-base percentage is only 12 points higher than his batting average, and he also has that high batting average on balls in play, kind of suggests that the strike zone discipline is not there, as you might expect from somebody who didn't make his debut until age 27, that, you know, he's been riding some pretty lucky, you know, placement of balls that isn't repeatable. So, yeah, all I'm saying is that it is kind of a patchwork lineup. And if you look at the ELO ratings for us against the Giants, and we should also say the Giants tanked royally down the stretch and, you know, we're not exactly inspiring a lot of confidence for their fans as well. And so the two teams are evenly matched according to, you know, the all of the non-starting pitching considerations like including the bullpen, in fact, but also mainly the offense and, you know, the hitters and the fielders. That's an even matchup. The starting pitching adjustment goes very slightly towards Syndergaard, despite what we said, because Bumgarner does have that longer track record. I think that plays into the ELO ratings. And then,
so it goes towards Bumgarner. Bumgarner's favorite, according to
No, no, no. Syndergaard is, but it's not as wide as you would expect based on those numbers that we listed, just because Bumgarner has been doing it longer than Syndergaard, who, remember, is still just in his second year in the major leagues. And so then you have the difference, and right now I should say ELO has us favored to win at a 55% probability, is almost entirely due to playing the game in Citi Field. The home field advantage is worth about 5%, at 4 to 5 percentage points. So almost all of it is due to home field, with a little bit of a rest adjustment, but the Giants get a little boost for that too. So it's a very close matchup, and we're favored, but we're not favored due to anything except for the game site, essentially.
55% New York Mets, 45% San Francisco Giants, according to 538's win probabilities coming in to the game. Neil, I think that brings us to a close for this week. This is our wild card special preview.
We will probably do a reaction pod.
We will almost certainly have to do a reaction pod. We're going to have to do it Thursday before the NLDS begins.
We're not going to be able to do it from Citi Field, unfortunately.
No.
Last week or 2 weeks ago's episode.
So, Neil, if you're panicking about anything by the time we next record, what will it be?
It will be that we won the wild card game and we're playing.
I love it. The panic comes when we win, not
Chicago
when we lose.
Exactly. Like, the panic is in many ways a good thing. I guess I'll be panicked about the off season and free agency and that kind of thing if we lose.
Save it.
But I just don't want to consider that possibility, even though I've just said there's a 45% chance that it does happen.
All right, Neil, that'll do it for this week's, or this episode, rather. Maybe more than just
hopefully,
one this
well,
week.
There will be more one way or another, but hopefully we will continue throughout the month even.
Our producer is Joe Sykes. We couldn't do the show without production assistance from Tony Chow. Our logo is by Pat Barrett. Our theme song is by Mystery Mansion. You can reach us at paniccitypod@gmail.com. We occasionally tweet from the handle paniccitypod as well. Neil, Conforto might not even make the roster.
So
but
what will
still...
our slogan, what will our tagline be after that?
Oh, man.
What other kind of animalistic action can...
Yeah, Nimmo's not going to make the roster of Conforto,
swim,
does it,
Nimmo,
right?
Swim.
No, he's going to be
that
gone, too.
That can't happen. We're just going to
flow, Rivera, flow.
Okay. I'm there
but
with
for
you.
For now, until we know the roster, because I don't think we know the rosters yet, right? 3, 2, 1.
Fly, Condor, fly.